step down back in November. But protesters who've taken to the streets for nearly a year say they don't believe Saleh will actually abide by the plan. They say a trip to the U.S. could have meant Saleh wouldn't be prosecuted for the deaths of hundreds of protesters. Troops loyal to Saleh shot and killed 9 protesters on Christmas Eve. Saleh's son and nephew remain in leading positions. Meanwhile, Islamic militants attacked a hotel in southern Yemen that serves alcohol, setting it on fire, killing 2 people and injuring at least 20. Political unrest in Yemen has allowed such militants to gain ground. Kelly McEvers, NPR News, Beirut.
In Egypt, the prosecution seeking the death penalty for former President Hosni Mubarak, the ousted leader, is accused of being complicit in the deaths of protesters during last year's uprising. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, now on Route 45 in Savoy. At Subaru's assembly plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status is designed to save cost and our future. It's part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information online at SubaruofChampaign.com or 352-4700.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. Our technical director, Jason Croft, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. My name is Celeste Quinn. Today, listeners, we open the phone lines and email folder for questions about computers. This is a topic we take up once a month on the first Thursday of the month. So whether you're looking for a new computer, have questions about online security, or need some troubleshooting advice, we have a couple of guests here in the studio that can lend a hand. Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick are ready to help. Debbie is a network engineer for Sites, Campus Information Technologies and Educational Services at the University of Illinois. Jim is a security engineer for NCSA, the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the university. Listeners, join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455-800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. Jim, Debbie, good to see you. How was your time away for the holidays?
It was good.
Good?
Very nice.
Very nice. And you showed me just a moment ago something that you got recently that I thought was a kind of a cool combination of something old and something new.
One of my Christmas presents is a fountain pen. I enjoy fountain pens, but on the cap, when it's closed, is a tip that will write on a touch tablet like an iPad or an iPhone.
That's pretty neat.
And very, very much old and very new.
Very new. Okay. Well, it seems like the next big thing in terms of computers is what's being called the Ultrabook. And these are powerful, as I understand it, but small notebook computers like the MacBook Air, much better than the netbooks that were popular some time back. But these Ultrabooks are lovely, but they're not cheap. So what are the benefits of these machines, and who might want to take a look at these things?
Well, I think a lot of it is going to be people that are replacing their desktops. So they want a powerful machine. They don't want two machines. Let's start with that. They want a laptop. They don't want a desktop. But they want something that's somewhat lighter than a standard laptop. But then they can go into their office, plug it into their big monitor, a Bluetooth keyboard, and a Bluetooth mouse, and have basically a full-powered machine with then a big monitor. My problem with them is that when I want a laptop, I don't want a 12-inch screen. So I think, you know, and that's going to be the people that stick with traditional size laptops are the ones that still want 15 or 16 inch screen, I think.
Yeah. We had a call on another Focus, I think it was program, it was last week perhaps. Someone wanted to travel abroad and they didn't want to carry the laptop and they have an iPad. And the listener wanted to know, was there a piece of hardware that would allow one to use a thumb drive with an iPad so that it would be maybe a little bit more portable for a traveler? Any ideas there?
In general, Apple doesn't support that. The closest thing they have is you can get an adapter that fits in the dock connector that you can put like SD cards in. But it has very limited access to what you can move around. You can do photos into their photo programs and a few other very limited file transfers, but it's not just files. What they really want you to use is iCloud. You can put documents in iCloud and bring them down to use in their word processing program, in their spreadsheet program, you know, mail, all those things, but not just general files.
Do you feel confident in the cloud?
It depends on what I'm doing.
I
feel reasonably confident that it's not going to disappear this year. I don't promise it'll be there next year. I was one of the people that was actually, the one time I made it to Macworld was when Steve Jobs stood there and announced, you can have an @mac.com email address and it will always be yours and it will always be free. 3 years later, I was paying $99 a year to have that email address. So my confidence that it will stay exactly as it is, not too high, that there will be something there that'll work like that, that somebody will offer, is very high.
So I would suspect that, again, the idea of backing up what you're putting up there would be something to think about.
Well, I don't think it's going to disappear overnight. If it's really important to you, absolutely back it up somewhere else. But more keep an eye on the service, and if they make an announcement that we will be closing in 2 months, don't ignore it.
And I think regarding backups is that you have to remember that there's more than one reason for having backups on, even if we're just talking about your home machine. Is backups are not just for failure of hardware, which is something that you should not really expect to happen to you when you're doing something in the cloud, is because Google or Apple or whoever is running the cloud service have multiple servers and redundancies and things. But the other reason to do backups is that in case you delete something and think about it a week later and go, geez, wish I hadn't done that, or wish I hadn't made that change and saved it to that file, I can go back and get my backup. So even for stuff in the cloud, and some services have, you can go back and look at previous versions, or you can even, things aren't moved. Three things don't disappear when you delete them. They go to the trash until you maybe empty the trash and things like that. But still, I think there are reasons to keep offline copies of things. If you find something, if you have files that are very important to you, I don't believe that you should keep your only copy in one cloud service. I think it's still a good idea to have a local copy on your machine or on a USB key.
Okay, very good. We're talking about computers this morning with Jim Irick and Debbie Flieger. They are with the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions about computers. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. That's the toll-free number, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. My husband, this holiday season, upgraded to Lion on Apple, and he had some problems getting the security downloaded for it. Debbie, have you heard about this problem?
Getting the security downloaded?
Getting the antivirus package.
I'm not aware of which antiviruses work for Lion or not. I know many things that worked for 10.6 do not work for Lion. And I don't know who's got their stuff updated and who doesn't.
Okay. What do we know about Lion so far? Have we heard about glitches? Have we heard about how people like it, don't like it?
It's different. I mean, I've been running it for a number of months now. In general, once I got used to the things that were different, I do really like it. Mostly because it's faster. A lot of things are faster. But it was really slow until I got more memory for my new computer. Mm-hmm. That was definitely one of the things. It was running great on an older computer. At half the RAM I had to put in the new computer. It's just one of those weird things. The newest thing I heard, I got a piece of email that Intuit has finally realized they like their Mac users and have announced that they will release a version of Quicken 2007 that runs on Lion, after having said for the last year they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. But I think most people have found they like it reasonably well.
Yeah. And Jim, what's the latest on Windows 7? I have that now loaded on my desktop here at
Just keep chugging along, basically.
Yeah.
It's been out a while. It's fairly stable. I haven't heard any major issues with it. Now people are talking about the next Windows 8, which I haven't done. I haven't looked into at all. I'm happy with 7. I could just stay here for a little while.
Yes, please.
Enjoy the pause.
Yeah.
You know, back to the Lion, one of the first things I do when I'm working on a Lion laptop is I go into the trackpad settings and go change the scroll direction. I like, when I'm on a computer, I like the text to follow, the way it used to work and not Apple's new way, which makes sense because it matches the way it works on tablets and, you know, and iPhones and things like that. But I always do it backwards the first time and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to go change it back the way it is and the way it is in my Windows machines. And
yeah, I like Windows 7. I like the relatively new operating system. It's faster, much faster. And I like how you can have a number of Word documents. You know, you can see what you're working on, what you've got in the background on the desktop.
Yeah, in the taskbar, it lists each individual open document, right? One of the things that my wife really enjoys on that with Windows 7 on a laptop is the drag, and I'm not even sure what they call it, but you take a window and you drag it to the right side or the left side of the screen, and it only fills up half the screen.
Right.
So when she's working on the laptop and needs to look on 2 separate windows at the same time, then she can actually drag one to the left and one to the right instead of having to manually move them around and get them to fit. I think it's Snap is what they call it, something like that.
Yeah.
She really enjoys that. In fact, we basically... it's one of the major reasons she went to a new Windows 7 laptop was because she had it on her desktop and then she wanted it on her laptop.
Yeah. Well, when is Windows 8 due?
Honestly, I haven't been keeping track. Yeah. I just see it in some of the news stuff and everybody's talking about how great and it's going to be a game changer and all that. But I haven't looked at any of its new features or its release date. Like I said, I'm happy to be at Windows 7.
Yes.
And I'll deal with Windows 8, I guess, when it comes out.
That's so comforting to hear somebody like you say that, Jim, because us mere mortals, we have a hard time adjusting to the new stuff.
Well, and I expect Windows 7 is a really stable. Everybody seems to be happy with it. You know, unlike Vista, certainly had people that really hated it. And you had even earlier, if we jump back to like the 90, 95, 98, Millennium, you know, there were some... And so with Windows... XP was the last one before Windows 7 that people really, you know, it works great, it's stable, let's just stick with it. And there's still a significant number of machines out there that are running Windows XP, which people need, if you're one of those people, you need to look at it, is because, they're not going to continue to support that product forever. And because of some of the security stuff, it's time to look at, you know, new machine, Windows 7 kind of stuff. Don't expect your old machine that's running, unless it's a recent machine that you put XP on, probably shouldn't expect an older machine to be able to run Windows 7. But I think Windows 7, my prediction is that it's going to be kind of like Windows XP is 6 years from now. We're still going to be talking about people running Windows 7 because it's been so stable and people like it and like the features that they're going to want to stick with it and not upgrade through whatever, you know, unless Windows 8 just changes everything and it's great and everything.
Yeah.
But I think there's going to be a lot of people running Windows 7 6 years from now,
okay,
just like we have people running Windows XP and it's been... somewhere around 10 years since XP came out.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a call. This is a listener in Charleston waiting for us on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I have a Dell laptop about 5 years old that I have installed. It does have XP on it, by the way, and I love it. I have installed McAfee Extended Protection, and it takes forever to run a scan, like 8 hours. And I have it set to run at night, but it doesn't. So can you give me any tips on what to do about that?
Sure. So a couple of things is probably a scan that takes 8 hours to run most likely is one of their deep scans. That would be my guess. You don't necessarily need to run a deep antivirus scan daily. I think a lot of...
No, I have it set for once a week.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fine. So then the issue, if that's what you want to run, then the issue is that, like you said, it doesn't complete overnight. What you're going to have to do is go play with the power saving features on the laptop. Number one, you're going to have to make sure it's plugged in when you're doing the scan.
I always have it plugged in.
Okay.
I don't use battery.
Okay. And then... you probably need to either, I don't know what options McAfee has for being able to prevent power saving. There are some things, sometimes you can go in and check and say, okay, don't let the computer sleep while I'm trying to do this.
Okay.
Your other option is on the, either to disable it permanently or to disable it just when on the, you're going to have to do it like on the day that that scan's going to run, is to go into your power saving features and tell it that when the laptop is on AC adapter, don't do any sleep measures whatsoever except for the screensaver or shutting the monitor off. So you don't want it to go to sleep after a couple hours of inactivity.
Right.
Is that, that would be my first guess of what's going on, is why it's not completing, is that after it starts the scan and you're not using the laptop, it's sitting there overnight trying to run the scan, is that the laptop's power saving features go, oh, there's no human at the keyboard, I should save power. And then it's interrupting the McAfee scan. So you can go into the settings on the Windows box and tell it, when we're on AC adapter, don't go to sleep and don't hibernate.
Okay, I'm always on AC adapter, though.
Well, and that's fine, but I'm just, and on most, on Windows operating systems, and even Macs are this way, is that you can change the settings of whether it's on AC adapter. You have to say, when it's on battery, do these things, when it's on AC adapter, do these things. So you only need to change these settings for the, for when you're on AC adapter. You don't need to mess with the ones that are listed on when on battery.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and is there any way of shortening the time, but you said it was on probably deep.
The only way to, so now if we're looking at shortening the time of the scan, would be to see what options the McAfee scan is doing. Antivirus and malware scans have certain features that you like, and I'm not familiar with McAfee's defaults, but some of the features that you can choose that will shorten or lengthen a scan are like how deep it goes. And one of those things is like, do I unzip zip files and other compressed files and then scan the contents of those compressed files? Do I scan every file on the system even if it's a non-executable? Do I scan every file on the system on the entire hard drive, or do I just scan the ones that are in the Windows and the program directories and maybe the home directory?
It looks like it's scanning everything.
Right. So now that's not necessarily, if the computer is going to sit there overnight, it's not bad once a week to actually probably have it do those things. I mean, if you can,
but it doesn't start until I open it up in the morning.
Well, and that's the other, you're going to need to leave the lid open.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So, yeah. And do you log in, or when you open it up in the, when you go sit at it in the morning, or is it still logged in with, from the last time you used it?
It's still logged in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's the power saving stuff would be what you're going to have to look at. The other option, like I said, is to, or if you want to shorten how long it scans, is to contact McAfee and find out. And then, so you do have it set, as far as the antivirus starting, you have it set at something like start at 10 p.m. or something?
Yeah, or I think 1 a.m.
Okay. So if it's not actually running at 1, my first guess is the power issue. And then if that's not, you might want to contact McAfee and say, okay, I have it set. It's supposed to start at Friday night at 1 a.m. or Saturday morning at 1 a.m., but it's not running. It doesn't run until I log in, and then it starts. And they can walk you through why their program's not starting.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener in Belgium. Line 4, hi.
Hello, and good morning to you all. As Ms. Quinn has heard me say before, I'm fairly inept with computers. But we had an older one, desktop, that I've used for many years for my bookkeeping and drawing abilities for my business. And it's gotten old. My wife used it for a long time for using her internet and things like she enjoys doing. And recently she watched our son with an iPad, tablet, not to be just iPad, but just tablets in general, and thought, well, that's a good thing for me to deal with the internet. And I have to agree with her. For photos and her internet stuff, it's just really perfect. It's a really amazing machine. But it has one thing that I notice about it, and that is it has to be synced. I think the word they use is synced, but interfaced with a computer every so often so they can go to iTunes so that it can do its magic. Now, the machine I have has gotten old enough that she doesn't want to use it anymore. And the question I have for you is this: what would be an appropriate new computer for her? continue using my old one because I'm completely happy with what it does. But what would be a good one for somebody to sync tablets with? You know, because it seems, are all of them that way, or is it just iPads that have to be synced to iTunes? I mean, that's kind of the question.
Well, I'd say the biggest thing is that what you know about syncing is not accurate anymore.
Okay.
But the very last release, the 5.0 release of the OS that runs on iPhones and iPads, does not require you to sync it to a computer. Now, if you have an older iPad that's running an earlier version, you're going to have to sync it to a computer one last time to put that software on. But after iOS 5, you can do software upgrades over the air, over your wireless. You can do all your purchasing from iTunes over wireless. You can tell it to back up to iCloud if you have iCloud. So because one of the biggest things you got out of syncing to the computer was a backup. If it got broken, stolen, you got a new one, whatever, and you were ready, you could plug it in and it could copy all your stuff back down. Apple now actually saves your purchases and you can re-download those. You didn't used to be able to re-download certain things you'd purchased previously, like songs. So they have really changed that in the Apple line. I'm not as familiar with the other tablet vendors, but it's the backups that I'd say would be the biggest thing. If you've added pictures or things like that, you can store some of that in iCloud, but only a certain amount.
I see. That's the whole idea, is to store the material, not so much you have to find out what's going on.
Right. Yeah. At this point, really, it would be a connected occasionally, let it suck all the stuff down for storage, but you could do all the management of an iPad from the actual iPad now. And it did not used to be true. That's very recent.
Now, the one she happens to have is an iPad 2. Is that new enough for that?
Yes, absolutely. Both versions of the iPad can run the new software.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call. This is Focus, and we're talking about computers this morning with Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick. They're with the University of Illinois. Debbie is a network engineer for Sites. Jim is a security engineer for NCSA. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions about computers with a phone call or with an email message. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. No one waiting at the moment. So if you've got a question, give us a call. When we were talking a little bit earlier, Jim, about the pace of change, do you think that is going to be a constant, that we will continue to be confronted on a regular basis with the need to adapt and to go with the newest?
It certainly doesn't seem to have been, has slowed down since I got into technology. The good thing is that so far, I was, when I was first getting into computer support and considering it as a job, a career, I was concerned that, okay, I'm pretty good at this now. What is it going to be like in 15 years? Am I going to be totally lost? Can I keep up? So far, I've been able to keep up. I assume Debbie possibly had some of the same thoughts.
Yes.
And we've been, it's most of the time, it's been incremental instead of big paradigm shifts. And even when there were paradigm shifts, we've been able to adapt and get on board. I don't see it slowing down. Some of the thing is that with the jump to web stuff, that was a big jump, and now it's a lot of incremental stuff on there. Some of the things I've just decided I don't care about, a lot of the social media things, I'm like, just not going to spend a lot of time on that.
Yeah.
I guess that's a younger thing, is from what I read.
Yeah. But it seems that like here at WILL, we are involved with social media, and so we have to kind of learn it because it's part of what we do as communicators. So that's been a challenge for some of us. Debbie, what's been your experience?
Somewhat similar. My Facebook account got created when people were having trouble connecting to Facebook over our network, and we were trying to figure out why it wasn't working. I've used it actually since, but I hadn't bothered to get one until then. But yeah, it changes, and you do have to pick what you're going to take the time to learn. you know, because there's so many things right. you could choose to learn. You pick which thing interests you most or fits your job most, or, and you learn that.
Yeah. I read an interesting think piece recently. It was an end of the year kind of think piece on technology, and the individual who wrote the piece said that eventually the social media that we seem to be so obsessed with at the moment will just become like part of the background. You know, it'll be like the telephone. You know, we just take it for granted. It's there, and we do it or we don't do it, and we do some of it or not. You know, that kind of thing. So that was kind of an interesting thing to think about.
It sounds like it. I did do a little quick research on Mac antivirus.
Okay.
And it looks like most of the big name customers do have something. Norton has something. Sophos has something. I didn't see anything from McAfee, but that doesn't mean they don't. And it turns out that Apple has put some anti-malware stuff actually into their system. A lot of things actually ask you, ever since 10.5 even, you know, oh, this app was downloaded from the internet. And I always cringe and go, yes, I know, I did it. But if you thought you were downloading a song and it said this app was downloaded from the internet, that should put off lots of big bells, whistles, and red flags, because songs aren't apps. If you thought you downloaded right. a picture and it says this app is downloaded from the internet, again, pictures should not be an app. And that should clue you in to, wait a minute, don't actually run this. And so they actually detect quite a bit of the malware. And there aren't currently any true viruses for Mac in the wild. But there's a number of malware things, things that try to fool you into installing software or giving people your credit card, almost like phishing, that some of the antivirus stuff can protect you from.
Okay. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign. Line one, hi.
Hi. I came home from vacation, had not used the laptop while we were gone. It was unplugged and stored. And after the first day of using it, it gave me what is known, I guess, as the blue screen of death. I did notice that it was quite warm at that time. I did the shutdown, the manual button shutdown, and let it cool. And I've been able to bring it back up and use it, but I've been using it only very briefly and watching it for heating. Not leaving it on as I used to, plugged in. Can you help me?
Well, I think you need to find out if this is a repeatable problem by just going back and using it the way you want to and see if it does it again.
Uh-huh.
I would think it'd be fairly rare. I've not run into it where a crash or something can actually heat a computer to the point where it actually damages components. Usually they'll heat them to a point where they cease functioning, and then no more heat happens. So I think you're safe in just using it the way you want to and see what happens. First guess would be possibly a fan failure.
Mm-hmm.
So the machine sat there unused, and the dust bunnies mm-hmm. Had a, you know, and got together and stopped one of your fans. So it's possible to just, is this a laptop or a desktop?
It's about a four-year-old Vostro.
That's a laptop then, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. There are fans in those, at least one, possibly two or three. It is possible to clean them out carefully. Some of it you can do just by turning it off and using canned air or really low air from an air compressor. Make sure it's not going to spit out any water condensation from the tank. And there are certain vent holes around it that you can do and blow through those, and you'll knock loose some of the stuff if you think it's a fan problem. Certainly laptops, especially if they're actually used as laptops on your lap, will accumulate lint.
And you enjoy the heat in the winter when sure. your legs warm.
Will accumulate lint and things into the ducts and the fans. So it's not a bad idea to try that, to give it a go. But otherwise, I would actually see if it will fail again
mm-hmm.
before you'd get too concerned
before
about
I take it.
It could have been that it just did a blue screen because after you came back from vacation, it was busy trying to run antivirus scans because it hadn't run in a long time. It was trying to run possibly other scans, maybe hard drive checks, downloading updates for Microsoft.
Some
of those things it does in the background without you knowing until it tells you it's ready to apply them. So it's possible that all of those things colluded to cause this error, and on a lot of, you know, any computer really is okay. They crash, it happens, shut it off, turn it back on, and go back to doing what you're doing and see if it crashes again.
Okay,
if you can get it to repeat, then be concerned and start troubleshooting it. But if not, honestly, most of the time, I think in most instances, you're just going to end up wasting time until you can actually see that it happens again.
Wouldn't be a battery problem by any chance?
I would expect a different error message besides a blue screen. Okay. If there was a battery problem, either the Dell onboard diagnostics would actually pop up and tell you there's a problem with the battery, it needs to be replaced, or after you turned it off and turned it back on, the Dell BIOS diagnostics would tell you that there was something wrong with the battery.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this morning. Excuse me. One more question about batteries. Will a laptop tell you, no matter what kind you have, that there's a problem with the battery?
No.
No.
But a lot of newer ones will tell you when there's a problem with the battery. Unfortunately, some people think there's a conspiracy going on from the manufacturers, and they prematurely tell you that there's something wrong with the battery. But a lot of newer laptops will actually tell you when it can't charge the battery, or for some reason the battery's getting to the point where it's not holding 25%, you know, it won't work 25% of its original charge or 10%. I'm sure it varies among the vendors what they decide the threshold of failure is.
And how can we, if we've got an older laptop, how can we check ourselves on the battery?
Really just unplug it and use it and see how long it lasts. That's what you want anyway, right? I mean, that's the whole point of the battery, is to see how long it lasts without being off charger. So if it doesn't last as long as it used to, and eventually it'll get to the point where you're like, man, I have to leave this on a charger a lot. I'm getting tired of this battery. Maybe it's time for a new one.
Yeah.
Now, when it's time for a new battery, if it's an old enough laptop, you should consider looking at what current laptop prices are, because replacement batteries are pretty pricey. And Debbie's going to tell us about replacement batteries on Macs in a minute, on Apple laptops. But on Windows machines, replacement batteries are pretty pricey. And I mean, it's not like it's it's $150 for a battery and you're going to get a laptop for $200. No, it's a significant increase to get a new laptop. But maybe you go, would I be better putting that $150 into a new laptop instead of this new battery? There are things you can do that'll increase battery life. One of them is when it's new, at least until it gets to the point where the battery's bad enough, is don't leave it on the charger all the time. Even when you're sitting at a desk. I charge it up until it says almost 100% or says 100%, and then I unplug it until it gets down to 20 or 30%, and then I plug it back in. Leaving it in on the charger all the time will decrease battery life, and so does heat. Heat is the number one, is a pretty high killer of batteries. So if you're using it on your lap, make sure that the vents are open, and that in the winter when it's keeping you warm, if you have a blanket on your lap, that you have the laptop elevated enough that the blanket's not closing up all the vents.
Okay.
And then
batteries work mostly the same way on the Mac. For at least the last couple of generations of hardware, say three years or so at least, it'll actually pop up and tell you if something's really wrong with the battery. It'll put an indicator in where you usually see the battery. It'll put like a red triangle or something with an exclamation point in it. In the Mac, if you go under the Apple menu, there's the About This Mac, and it doesn't say anything about the battery there, but it's got a little button for more info. And when you go to more info, it tells you all about the hardware and the software and all that. But one of the choices under the hardware section is power. And if you scroll down, there's a section specifically called battery power, and it will tell you how many cycles is left on the battery, you know, how many cycles have been used on the battery. It'll tell you what the current is, whether the condition is normal, things like that. And just more details than you probably want to know. But, you know, there's a section called health condition or health information and condition normal. If it'll make big red letters there if there's something really wrong. It says replace battery now.
Okay.
And how do we do that on our new MacBook Pros?
You take it to them.
Okay.
And let them replace it.
So there is no battery hole, battery removal, user removal battery on the new MacBook Pros, and I assume the Airs were probably the first model that had that feature.
Yes,
if you want to call it a feature.
Yes, the Airs are the first one. They've gotten pretty good life, although, pretty upfront, the back's held on by a bunch of Phillips head screws, and it is a disconnectable battery. So if your machine is out of warranty, and you're comfortable taking out 6 or 7 screws and disconnecting and reconnecting a connector, it can be user replaceable. I wouldn't recommend it for anything in warranty because I'm sure that would void your warranty.
Okay.
But it's not that hard.
All right. This is Focus. We're talking this morning about computers with Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick. More after a short break.
The sketch comedy series Portlandia begins season 2 this week on IFC. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with co-creators and co-stars Fred Armisen of Saturday Night Live and Carrie Brownstein of the indie rock bands Slater Kinney and Wild Flag. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
You're tuned to Focus from Illinois Public Media. I'm Celeste Quinn. This morning in this hour, we're talking about computers with Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick. Listeners, your questions, comments are invited. Join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Coming up tomorrow in the 11 o'clock hour of the program, we'll talk about dogs. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel will be with us in the 11 o'clock hour. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, and they join us once a month on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs, dog behavior, training, and care. So you'll want to tune in for that if you are a dog lover. Let's take another call now. This is a listener in McLean County on line 4. Hi there.
Good morning. I'm sorry I missed the beginning of the show. I just turned it on, and you guys were talking a little bit about Windows 7 and the ones that have XP and one that have Vista. I have a desktop that has XP, and then I have a laptop that has the Vista on it. I am just wondering about being able to, if I decide to get the Windows 7, whether I could put them on either one of them.
Not to my knowledge. The license for the operating system is per device.
Right. No, that's okay. But
okay.
My point, it's not a matter of both. It's a matter of what would the specs need to be, like the RAM, memory, and all that good stuff. Because I have a friend who tells me that might as well ditch my desktop, which has the XP, because they're not supporting XP anymore. You know, Windows is not supporting it, so it's just, you know, to me that's just, you know, throwing away a lot of money. So I'm just wondering, what is it that we need for the XP to work? For Windows to go on my older computer versus a newer computer, or I may just need to get more memory? Or
I wouldn't even try to put Windows 7 on an XP machine unless it was purchased at least when Vista was available on it and you chose to put XP on it.
Okay.
I'm trying to find right now, and I can't. I'm having a difficult time, but they're definitely, you need to look at going away from XP. Certainly there are a lot of security stuff that have been added into Vista and then carried over and enhanced in Windows 7. And there are some end of support stuff related to XP.
Right.
I know some of those that they have increased because of there were so many, the XP install base was so large and people did not want to upgrade to Vista. So Microsoft did increase the length of time that they were going to continue creating security fixes for XP. But that, you know, that's certainly going to end before the security fixes for Windows 7 end. So honestly, the best thing would be to go Windows, to find out exactly what specs Microsoft says Windows 7 requires, to see if your either one of your two machines can be upgraded to Windows 7 and at all, or even if they are upgraded successfully, if you're happy with the performance. But my first guess is that you're not going to either be able to install Windows 7 on your old machine for two reasons. One of them is that the processor and the amount of memory and things are not going to function on it. They're not going to be beefy enough, basically. And the second possibility is that some of the devices you have, some of the devices that make up that system, sound cards, device drivers, or the devices that make up the motherboard and things and the peripherals, are not going to have available Windows 7 drivers on them. Device manufacturers, if they stop making a particular model of, let's say, the card that controls your CD-ROM drive, or your sound card, and then later Windows 7 comes out after they stop making that, unless they have a significant install base of that card, they a lot of times they will not create new drivers for the new operating system. So then you just won't be able to use that feature or that function of your computer with the new operating system.
So it means basically it isn't just adding more memory to it. You really need more parts that need to be replaced, i.e. a new computer then.
Right. Certainly the best bet is if you're going from XP, and like I said, unless the machine, unless you can go to, like if it's a Dell or an HP, if you can take that model number of machine that you have and go to Dell or HP's website and go to their support site and go into their driver section and see that they specifically list that they have drivers for your computer for Windows 7, unless you find that, then I wouldn't bet on it working, and you're better off buying a new machine.
Okay.
I mean, for me, how long ago did you purchase the XP machine?
I think the XP is about 5 years old, and the laptop is about 3. The laptop, I had the option of Vista, My desktop has the option of Vista, and I didn't. The newer one came with Vista. You're right, the older one did have the option. And because I had heard so many bad things about it, I didn't go to Vista, and now I kick myself because at least I wouldn't have had to worry about it, you know, now, so to speak.
Right. So there's the possibility then that since it came, the possibility of Vista. So the Vista and Windows 7 drivers are very similar.
Okay.
If not the same for a lot of devices. So there's a possibility that you can actually go if it's, a, like I said, if it's a manufacturer's computer, Dell, HP, such and whatever, okay. Is that you could actually go to their site and find that they support Windows 7. Now, that still doesn't mean that it's going to run well because of memory and the processor speed. Somebody asked me a very similar question, and I was like, okay, what is it going to take for their computer to be able to run Windows 7? And I found the manufacturing model number, the model of that computer, and I just went to Google, and I typed in that model number and said, you know, upgrade to Windows 7, worth it? And I found forums where people had already tried it, this was about a video card, and they were like, no, it's not really worth it. It didn't really work well. It was better to, I was better off, instead of trying to bump up my RAM to 2 gig of RAM to make it run better, I was better off spending my money on a new computer. So you could try that too to find out if other people have gone where you're considering going and how they, what they thought of it once they got there. The laptop, if it came with Vista, it's very possible that you could probably upgrade that to 7. It depends what features you need. I would probably not spend the money. If I had a laptop that had Vista on it, I don't think I would spend the money for an upgrade to Windows 7. I would just wait until it was time to buy a new laptop and get a Windows 7 laptop.
Okay.
For me, desktop lifetimes are 4 to 5 years, and laptop lifetimes are 2 to 3 years.
Really?
I'm kind of hard on laptops.
Okay.
And I expect, I use a laptop as my main desktop PC, so as operating systems and as programs get bigger and they slow down, for me, I need to upgrade that fast. Otherwise, I get to the point where I'm like, man, I'm just waiting on this thing. It's really frustrating. And so it's time for a new laptop. With laptops, a lifetime expectation to laptops is that they are, it's harder to work on them. They have more moving parts. When's the last time you dropped your desktop compared to dropping your laptop? Things like that. And so it's just the possibility of disaster is higher on a laptop just because it's a mobile device.
Right. In terms of if I didn't make any changes, how long can I keep using my computer, either the desktop or laptop? Let's just say the desktop for now. How long can I keep using before it becomes a major security issue? Or it'll basically die on me.
Well, given 5 years old, you could have components, capacitors, and things fail any time, I guess. I'm looking through and I'm trying to understand. I'm looking at the Microsoft product life cycle website right now. I'm actually trying to decipher when security updates stop.
I think XP's already stopped, and I didn't even realize it because I'm not in the habit of getting it updated. Which is not a good habit, but I just realized one day I did, and they said zero, and I got talking to a friend. He said, they already stopped.
So maybe they have, and like I said, extended support still exists for Windows XP, but I'm not positive. of, because it says extended support ends April 8, 2014, end of mainstream support April 14, 2009. So it's possible that that's actually when public releases of security packs ended, was 2009. Mm-hmm. So in general, if that is true, you do not want to be using a Windows XP machine on an internet connection.
Okay.
There are way too many malware things out there that are ready to exploit unpatched operating systems for you to continue to use and surf the internet, or have an internet-connected computer running an old operating system like that. I mean, as long as you keep using the newest browser, so the newest Firefox, the newest Chrome, I don't know what Internet Explorer is looking like on a XP machine, you're better off, but still, in my opinion, not as safe as if you were running a fully patched Vista or Windows 7 machine.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very, very much. I really appreciate your advice.
And we take another call now. This is a listener in Loda, line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a Dell Inspiron laptop, and I heard you say something about you shouldn't have the plug-in, the AC adapter plugged in all the time. Do you mean during the time that I'm using it? Because I only use it plugged in. I don't use the battery hardly ever. So if that's my case, should I take the battery out? Or is it safe and just to be unplugged, should be unplugged when I am not using it?
No, so you want to leave the battery in. The reason for that would be is that if you're using it and the AC power to your house is interrupted, or the AC adapter for some reason it comes out, then the machine will just stop working, and you don't want that. So it's best to leave the battery in.
Okay.
But no, my recommendation, so I'll tell you how I use it, and maybe Debbie can talk about how she does hers. So the way I charge my laptop is that I use it, and when the battery gets down to, usually when it tells me, oh, you have 20 minutes of battery power left, which is pretty low, I plug it in and charge it until it gets to 100%. And then when I notice that it's 100%, I unplug it again and continue to use it, and I do that until it says 30%. And then when I'm not using it, I actually have a time charger. So I have this little AC adapter gizmo that has a button on the side of it and a switch, and it's set for 4 hours. And I have the laptop charger plugged into it. And when I'm done with my laptop, I lay it down, close the lid, and push the button on that charger, and that'll then charge it for 4 hours and then stop charging it. And that's part of it is that it's not continually charging the laptop battery. The other part of that is I'm saving power because the AC adapter is not energized 24/7. So I'm actually saving money.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
And Debbie, if you want to talk about...
I'm not as good as you are. I tend to leave it plugged in. If I'm at work, I never know when I need to pick it up and go to a meeting. I do, but my calendar's pretty full. So when I'm at my desk, I plug it in. And at home, I tend to leave it on because it's getting mail and stuff like that, and I walk away from it. Now, if I pick it up off my desk and take it somewhere, I do try to run it all the way till the battery's down. But I'm sure it does shorten my battery life considerably to leave it plugged in as much as I do.
Okay.
So I just looked up the device I have, and I'm sure there are other brands. This is just the brand I have. Is a Belkin Conserve socket, and it has a switch on the side that selects either 30 minutes, 3 hours, or 6 hours. And so you have... your AC adapter plugged into it, and you push a button on it, and then it'll power that device for either 30 minutes, 3 hours, or 6 hours, and then shut off till you push the button again. And that's what I use with my laptop charger.
Okay. And let's take another call. This is a listener in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Yes. About the support for XP, it has not terminated. I'm constantly getting updates, but she's probably set hers to fully automatic update, and so she just never knows it. But if she checked for updates and it said no updates available, it means she's fully up to date.
Okay.
The other thing is, you're right about the drivers. That can be a problem. But it takes less power to run 7 than it does. Takes less memory to run 7 than it does to run XP.
Okay.
So... her friend isn't giving her very good advice. Your advice is probably not bad. She's probably going to have to think about a new computer. But I think they're planning to support XP now until about 2014.
That's what the Microsoft website said that for extended support.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is, I believe, means only security fixes.
I think it's more than that. But you may be right. They were having trouble updating 7 for use on some of the mobile devices. And because they were not able to replace XP on those, they extended the use for all XP. At least that was what the story was 3 or 4 months ago.
Okay.
Memory's cheap if she needed more memory, even for a short time. DDR memory is running around $30 a gigabyte, I believe. It may be a little higher now. It fluctuates.
Yeah, it's the hard drives that are expensive now because of the floods in Thailand.
Yeah, and I guess if I were going to replace a hard drive, I'd buy an external hard drive, probably a USB 3 and a SATA drive, which can be used with a USB 2 even on an older computer. And then you could use it with a new computer and you'd have full advantage.
Okay, well, thanks for the thoughts there. And those should be useful to our listener in McLean County. And we're going to wrap up here with a question from a listener by email. I'd like to get rid of my old computers. Can I clean them up myself, or do I need a pro to do it, or should I just take a hammer to them?
Well, the only part that actually stores information would be any hard drives or that you have for them. Hard drive, floppy, CD-ROM kind of thing. But the things that are in the machine, the only thing that has your personal stuff on it is the hard drive. So first, if you're going to take a hammer to it, don't take a hammer to all of it. Take out the hard drive and then take all the rest of it to the nearest recycling facility. That would be if you can't get it to run anymore. If you actually can get the machine to run, there are several utilities out there that, again, what they're for is to erase the hard drive to a point where it's nobody can recover it. And I am trying to find, if you search engine for DBAN, DBAN, which stands for Derek's Boot and Nuke, that is a free hard drive eraser program. Basically, you can burn it to a CD, maybe boot off a USB key. Then you get the computer to boot off that CD and you select, I don't know, it has military grade erasure techniques. It takes 18 hours, and you can be sure that the hard drive's clear after that. If you if you don't think you're concerned about that data and you're concerned about how long or that you're not going to do it right, take the hard drive out and stick it on a shelf. They don't take a lot of space. Recently, I did see somebody that had a lot of non-functioning drives. They did not want to take the time to try to get them to work to erase them, so they just put them in a drill press and drilled a half-inch hole through each hard drive.
Okay. And there we'll leave it for this month for computers. Jim, Debbie, thank you so much.
You're
welcome. Good to see you. We'll see you in March. How about that?
Sounds right.
All right. Next month on February 2nd, Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois will be with us for Computers and You. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is Focus.
Programs on WILL are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting you to experience delicious specials, fair trade coffee, and your favorite treats at the Intermezzo Cafe. More information about upcoming events is at KrannertCenter.com.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3 Urbana. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. 2 minutes before noon Central Time, let's take a look at commodity prices. In Kansas City, March wheat trading at $6.96 and a quarter. That's down 17 and three quarters. May, $7.04 and a half, down 17 and a half. March wheat in Chicago, $6.33. That's down 17. May, $6.52, down 16. March corn, $6.42 and a half, down 16. May, $6.50 and three quarters, down 16. July, $6.56 and a half, down 16 and a half. September, $6.03 and a half, down 14 and a quarter. January soybeans, $12.05, down 16 and a half. March, $12.13 and a half, down 16 and a half. May, $12.22 and a quarter, down 17 and a quarter. July, $12.31 and three quarters, down 16 and three quarters. January soybean meal, $3.11.90, that's down $5.60. January soybean oil, $51.92, down 81. February live cattle, $121.77 and a half, that's up 15. April up 15 at $125.00. $65. January feeder cattle, $148.40, up $65. March, $150.95, up $40. The February lean hogs contract is off 32.5 cents at $84.85. Outside markets, February crude, 103.03, that's down 19. The U.S. dollar, 80.91, that's up 79. The CRB index down 360 at 310.20. I don't have a figure for you on the latest tick on the Dow. The S&P 500 is off 1 point at 1,270.